And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It is 4 minutes past nine on this Monday. It's the 21st of October and we're live for another week of the 9 to noon show. I hope you had a good weekend. It was a blustery, wintry, wet one. Well, it wasn't wintry, sorry. It just felt a bit wintry and autumnal, if you know what I mean. But that's simply because I was stuck in the house. How was your weekend? Let us know if there's anything you want to talk about in the show today. The lines are open for you as always. 086 60 25000. If you come across anything you want to raise on the programme or something you think we should know about, that's the text or WhatsApp number, and you can WhatsApp your voice notes to that number as well. Feel free to give us a call if that's your preferred way of contacting us. 07491 25000. Emails, comments at highlandradio.com, and you can contact us from wherever you are if you're watching the show, because we're streaming live across YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, on our Facebook channels. Just search Highland Radio, like and subscribe to those services too if you don't mind, and we're also on the X platform at Highland Radio there as well. So no excuses not to be involved. Let's have a quick look through what's making the newspapers today. The Donegal News this morning. Strong winds and heavy rain battered most parts of Donegal yesterday, and homes and businesses were without power as Storm Ashley bared its teeth across the northwest from early in the day. There was heavy flooding on many roads, and fallen trees and branches across a number of routes ensured that driving conditions were extremely hazardous for most of yesterday. And fair play to the council crews out to clearing roads where trees had fallen. And most of the power is back now. There's a handful of people without power in Bundoran. The Sticky Wicket is in Carndonagh. 113 customers there without power still this morning. The ESB hopes to have power there restored by 4 p.m. This afternoon. Metairn had escalated Donegal to a strong orange weather warning over the weekend, and the public were warned to exercise extreme caution. The Derry News this morning. The PSNI has started making arrests using new kits to detect drug use at the roadside. Specifically trained officers from the road policing unit and district support teams have been issued with drug wipes to check for cannabis and cocaine in a 12-month pilot programme across the region. We already in the Republic there extensively test for drugs at the roadside. On to the Nationals now, and as you can imagine, all of the talk seems to be about the general election. We know now that it is going to be this year, and the strong money would be on November 29th. It would make most sense. But preparations for an early general election are ramping up as Taoiseach Simon Harris confirmed publicly for the first time yesterday that he expects to go to the people this year. A date towards the end of November is seen within government circles as the most likely time for the election to be held. Mr. Harris is due to meet Taoiseach Micheál Martin and Green Party leader Roderick O'Gorman this evening, with the timing of the election set to be discussed. It's a toughie, because if they do agree the date this evening, it would be hard not to... Sorry, it would be perhaps unfair on the public if it is actually decided this evening, and other candidates as well, to not actually make that information public. I can understand how you can be a little bit coy about it if you haven't agreed with your coalition partners. But if they do agree tonight, they need to let the people know, I think. The Taoiseach said yesterday he has no intention of springing a surprise on my coalition colleagues, and he believes the government will amicably agree a time period for the election. I'm conscious it is ultimately my constitutional prerogative, Mr. Harris said. That's something I take seriously, but the election won't be far away at this stage. Mr. Harris said he wanted a series of measures passed before going to the polls, including the finance bill, which brings in tax cuts announced in the budget and the setting of new housing targets. So as I say, in my head anyway, I'm kind of planning for November 29th. They could go the 22nd. Theoretically, there's not much that much notice that is required, but the 29th makes an awful lot more sense. And of course, we'll be gearing up to bring you full extensive coverage of it. It's going to be a really interesting general election. The polling would take place on the Friday, and then the election count on Saturday, and all ballot boxes counted in Letterkenny as well. So we'll have our team down there just to let you know what is happening as it happens. And in advance of that as well, those who wish to take part will be invited to take part in pre-election debates, where we can thrash out some of the big issues and see where people stand. And any candidate that is declared will be invited to take part, and then it's up to them if they choose to do so or not. And if they choose to do so or not, then it's up to the public to draw their own conclusions from that as well. But that's all to come over the next 5 or 6 weeks. So it's going to be pretty exciting, perhaps, or not. I don't know. Let's see. Staying with politics, pressure mounts on McDonald to correct all record on age of texts teen. There's growing pressure on Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou McDonald to correct their Dáil record after she incorrectly stated that a teenager sent inappropriate texts by a former party senator was 17 years old when in fact he was 16. I can't imagine her resisting that. She was of the view that the teen was 17 and not 16, so I presume she'll have no issue correcting the Dáil. Fine Gael's Jennifer Carol McNeill accused Ms. McDonald of providing completely wrong information in relation to the controversy engulfing the former Senator Niall O'Donoghue. Last week, the Sinn Féin leader admitted that repeated questioning incorrectly. Sorry, last week, the Sinn Féin leader admitted after repeated questioning incorrectly that a 17-year-old made a complaint about an inappropriate message from their party leader in the Shannon, said Ms. McNeill. There is nothing correct about this, despite Sinn Féin repeatedly giving the false age at the time of the communication and complaint we've established through the teen himself. He was 16. On to the Irish Daily Mail now, and I know many of you are following this tragic story of Kyron Dernan. Child benefit and welfare payments for 8-year-old Kyron Dernan were being paid even as authorities suspected he had moved across the border into the north. The young boy was reported missing in August, but the Gardaí believe he may have died up to 2 years ago. Officers have started a murder investigation into Kyron's death, despite no body being found, and Gardaí are investigating how Kyron's school, as well as representatives from the Child and Family Agency, TUSLA, who interviewed the Dernan family, did not know he was missing. Now, can you imagine any scenario like this whereby, you know, one of our children, God forbid, just disappears off the face of the earth, doesn't go to school, TUSLA can't actually, you know, visit the child because he's not there. You would imagine alarm bells should have rang far sooner than they did. And despite officials at TUSLA believing claims the boy had moved out of the jurisdiction, welfare and child benefit continued to be paid by the Department of Social Protection. The last known picture of Kyron that proves he was alive was posted on Facebook by Kyron's mum, Dayla, 24, in April 2022. Kyron was pictured with his two brothers and the photo was captioned, "The three who mean the most." It was published around the same time the 8-year-old's attendance at a primary school in Dundalk ended, a source claimed. And other papers are reporting that digs are due to take place shortly in an effort to find Kyron. Back to politics now, and Jerry the Monk Hutch could go head-to-head with Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou McDonald for a seat in Dublin Central in the upcoming general election. The crime boss, as he's described in the paper, who was last year cleared of the 2016 murder of Kinahan associate David Byrne at the Regency Hotel, has told pals he's considering a shot at a Dáil seat. The 61-year-old was found not guilty despite State Supergrass and former Sinn Féin councillor Jonathan Dowdall testifying that Hutch told him he was one of a 6-man hit team involved in the gun attack. And now the Monk could be about to give Sinn Féin another headache after a week where Mary Lou McDonald faced a grilling over inappropriate texts sent by a former party senator to a teenage boy and a complaint against Chair of the Public Accounts Committee, TD Brian Stanley. On to the Mirror now, and a story from England, and one of their sporting heroes, Chris Hoy, has been overwhelmed by public support after he announced his terminal cancer diagnosis. The 6-time Olympic cycling champion, he's just 48, he's been given 2 to 4 years to live. He told how his prostate cancer had spread throughout his body before it was diagnosed last year. His wife Sarah, mum of their children Chloe, 7, and Callum, 10, has also just been diagnosed with a severe form of multiple sclerosis. Callum, then 9, asked his dad if he was going to die. Chris told him no one lives forever, but he hoped, thanks to the medicine, to be here for many, many years to come. He decided to speak out to raise awareness about living with stage 4 cancer. The family is going just through an awful experience at the moment. On to, or finally to, the Irish Daily Star. And comedian Patrick Kilty's description of Sinn Féin as traitors on RTE's Late Late Show was miles away from satire and should prompt an apology from Ireland's national broadcaster, a party TD said. Host Kilty made the comment linking the Republican Party to the hit show The Traitors during the opening monologue of the RTE flagship entertainment programme on Friday. He joked that the hunt was on for contestants for the Irish version of the reality show before images of Sinn Féin President Mary Lou MacDonald and former party member Brian Stanley appeared. Now, RTE have defended it, saying that it is satire. People expect it to be satire. I mean, if you watch like SNL in America, for an example, it is an entertainment show. They often hit hard on the political leaders over there. Was it justified, the satire? I'm not sure if you watched it or you read about it afterwards, or do you think it was a little bit more serious than that? And do you believe an apology is justified, or is that the cut and thrust of it and you just have to take these things on the chin? Let us know if you have any views on that or anything we mentioned in the papers, or as I said at the top of the show, you want to talk about something yourself that you think we should be talking about. Get in touch using the usual numbers. And let's go to line one now, and we're joined by Mary. Good morning to you, Mary.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you all getting on?
We're grand.
Okay.
We're grand now.
Bit of a scare. Tell us what happened.
Yes, well, I'll say another scare. We live out in Ballymaleel, out beyond the Silver Tassie, sort of where the road straightens off on the way to Remelton. And it's a notorious part of the road. You'd think a straight road, it should be grand, but it isn't. It is a road that is 80 kilometres an hour. It's residential and there are two schools on this road. Mm-hmm. And yesterday was just another experience that I had in my car with my family of another near miss, where a motorist coming behind at speed, I will add, was not going 80 kilometres an hour, did not anticipate that somebody ahead of them would be slowing down and turning, even though I was braking, and because I know at this stage I have to be letting the people behind me know from a good 50 to 100 metres nearly back that I'm indicating and that I'm slowing down, and as I had to slow down, because I have to slow down quite a lot to sort of make the tight turn into my house. Mm-hmm. The brakes flying, the smoke or the steam or whatever it is that is caused by brakes, or the sliding on the road, or and the skid marks, the skid sound of the guy behind that wasn't paying attention, was going too fast and didn't anticipate somebody would be turning and was nearly into the back of me. Again, this happens all the time.
What's causing this, if you know what I mean? Obviously, there's drivers going too quick, but is it because it's a straightaway and people don't know it's 80 and they just put the foot down? Or why do you think we're seeing reoccurrences of these types of near misses?
Well, it's 80 kilometres the whole way from just beyond Arena 7. So from the hill at Maharenan there where it goes up, the speed limit changes there 80, and it's 80 the entire way to Remelton without fail. So it's no surprise that it's 80 by the time they're out as far as me. So I don't know why this happens. But, I can tell you exactly why it happens. Because people are frustrated by the time they get out this far, because there's a massive increase since Polestar. That by the time people get out here, they've already been stuck in the town for long enough that they just want to get on out the road. Mm. There may have been no opportunities to overtake between Woodland School and the Silver Tassie. Then you have the big round bend kind of at the farm there where the hill kind of rises, and you're not supposed to overtake there, even though it happens every day. Mm-hmm. And the first opportunity that people get to put the boot down or to overtake is right in front of a row of houses.
Yeah,
and there's a broken line that starts right outside the front of the houses that I live in, and people are overtaking as soon. They're even overtaking before they get there. There's another junction that kind of I don't know what the townland area is there, but it can take you the whole way up to like the mountaintop by a back road, mm-hmm. just as the road straightens off there. And there's a lovely big junction there that's really well laid out for people from both sides of the road to make the turn there. And at that, people just put the boot down. They're overtaking over the junction. and so they're overtaking long before they're permitted to overtake. And they're overtaking in front of this row of houses there, and there are two schools beyond, about 500-600 metres up the road.
Woodlands is one of them, isn't it?
Oh, no. I'm closer to Remelton here. I'm
talking right, okay.
The
You're
Wonder
back
Years.
The other way. Right, okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, I'm towards Remelton, yeah.
Okay.
So I'm the Remelton side of the Silver Tassie. So you have the Wonder Years, which used to be known as the House of Fun, and you have Cashel Shanahan National School, of which I'm a parent of those schools. I've had both my children in both those establishments. And currently do. And from speaking to parents and staff and childminders and whatever else, that everybody is facing difficulties. They are all being hit with near misses. Oh, have I lost?
No, I'm listening to you. I'm trying to figure out here what the solution might be, or what do you believe the solution might be?
So my solution, and I've spoken to county councillors. Mm. I know Jimmy Kavanagh has raised it in the chamber to get an unbroken line, because this is the thing: there is a broken line the whole way up and the whole way up past the school. So you are legally permitted to overtake at 80 kilometres an hour, mm-hmm, in front of two school buildings, and it has happened. I mean, I have seen vehicles coming from Remelton that are not anticipating there to be a school there, not anticipating traffic to be stopping, coming from Remelton to make a right turn into those buildings.
Yes.
And jamming on brakes. I saw a near miss one day at the school gate where an articulated lorry was damn close to taking out two families. And he was on his phone actually as well, so that's a whole other problem. Yeah. So we need, I mean, there's a bylaw that, I mean, I've looked us all up, there's a bylaw that has permitted for the reduced speed limits at certain schools like Mahara Beg and St. Junan's down in Lahey, and I think about seven other schools around the county that are on main roads, you know, that they're, mm-hmm, outside town boundaries where the speed limits are naturally larger anyway. We should have that out here at Cashel Shanahan and Wonder Years, that during school hours or the, you know, the pick up drop off times, that there's a reduced rate to at least 60, if not 50. We should have traffic calming measures, be it rumble strips, be it better lights, coming from Remelton on the road. We've actually just had that stretch of the road resurfaced up there, probably, I don't know, is it 200, 300 metres of the road up at the school. Was resurfaced, but it was a lick and a prayer. I mean, yeah, they've put a new bit of tar down, but they've relined the road exactly as it was with a broken line. The hard shoulder was not cleared off, so it's still all overgrown. People cannot walk in this area. Like, I live 500 metres away from my children's school, and we cannot walk to school. The road is too dangerous.
Yeah, I can see.
You know,
that,
and yet then they still want to tax me on my diesel car. Do you know, like, I have no option. I spoke to a man in the an engineer in the council last week, and like, they did say they are going to look at it, but sure, it just goes on to a long list of everything else that needs to be done. This road needs a full upgrade, like the Kilmacrenan Road.
Yes.
But it needs traffic calming.
It's a toughie because it's such a major road, isn't it? And I think people think that is just their... I mean, whatever the TIA or the council categorise it at, people just think that's the main road to Remelton and driving it just as they see fit, it seems.
Yeah, and now, to be very fair, there's a speed van sits out on this road, right on this stretch, very, very regularly. And mm-hmm, that is great. And as residents and school users, we actually welcome that because it does help to keep the speed limits at bay for the duration that it's sitting there.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But as soon as it's gone, there's people donutting on this road every night of the week. It's ridiculous. Like, my next door neighbour had the front wall destroyed a number of years ago. When I bought my house, the front wall, the gate post of mine was tumbled down because someone had crashed into it. My next door neighbour was damn near killed. Has been left with life-changing injuries from an accident up on this road 2 years ago. It's just this is an exceptionally dangerous road.
Caroline says Caroline's watching on Facebook. She says coming out of the creche Wonder Years at Cashel Shannon, turning right back into Letterkenny. It's a daily nightmare. Traffic speeding both ways. Something needs to be done before it's too late. People feeling, it seems, yeah. Mary, and you've kind of mentioned this yourself, they're taking their life in their hands, sort of pulling in and out of these places.
Yes, yes. We do. And people just have, they have, there's no concern whatsoever. Now, we welcome the fact that the road has been remarked up there with it, because the school, or it's, you know, it's a slow school ahead.
Yes.
That was completely removed from the road just by wear and tear over the years. So at least we have that back. But like the one coming from Remelton, it's practically at the school gate. Like, you've no time to actually react. You know, even if you didn't know the school was there. The lights were out of order for a very, very long time. Now I think that they're working again. Now, when I say lights, I mean that, you know, the two little flashing yellow lights. But again, they're practically at the school gate. Like, they're not really giving warning. They need to be 50, 100 metres on up the road where maybe people have time to act with some sort of caution. But like, we need rumble strips. We need big, bright yellow markings all over this road to account for the fact that there are school children. Somebody will be killed, or someone's going to take the front wall off the school, but of the school boundaries.
God forbid, yeah.
Something is going to happen. It's terrible. It really, really, really is terrible. And like down at Woodlands, there's islands on the main road, and Woodlands doesn't even face on to the main road. Like you access it through a side road, but yet these are road facing buildings, schools, and there's no traffic coming.
Yeah,
whatsoever.
Right. Mary,
it's barely an ocean.
Strong points, well made. We'll make our own inquiries. I mean, this is just comes down to safety, isn't it? I mean, it's not
safety.
About being disruptive.
It's just
about safety.
Absolutely not. Like, we need an unbroken white line to pass this row of houses that's here, where the old post office is, if people know where the old post office used to be at Ballymaleen. That stretch of road there, where KS Kitchens, everybody knows that stretch of road, and people are overtaking. Like, what actually happens is, I might go to turn right out of my house to go to Letterkenny, which means I have to sort of cross the road, and somebody coming from Letterkenny might stop to kind of let me through or slow down enough to let me make my turn,
and someone will start overtaking them. That's
and
the problem,
not expect to see a car.
I mean, outside of when the speed van is there, I think when people are adhering to the speed limit and going at 80, there needs to be a more visible demonstration that it's a speed limit of 80, because that's when people start doing the dangerous overtaking, because they want to sit at 100. Yeah. So listen,
it's a speed limit of 80 that needs more caution. People need to be more cautious that there are manoeuvres happening.
But those lights that sort of track your speed.
There's a multi-car collision on the road now, and my husband's come in to tell me there is a multi-car collision somewhere on this stretch of road at the minute. So there we go. Okay. Point in case.
Right, okay.
Job
well, hopefully
done.
They're all
I mean,
okay.
What else can we do? Please God, they're okay.
Yep.
Please God, everybody is okay. Like, this is exactly it. It's happening every day, every week. I'm here 9 years and I have seen it absolutely countless times. I am talking every single week, if not daily in some cases.
All right. Listen, thanks for that. So, we'll make our inquiries. I appreciate it, Mary.
Thanks.
Take care of yourself.
Bye
bye. 086 60 25,000, the WhatsApp and texts to that number. Speeding at schools, she's 100% right. I live near a school and I see it all the time. Anyone caught speeding past a school should be fined on the spot. A good €500 to wake them up. I'm after coming along the Ballymaleel Road and there is a collision just after happening at the Farm Junction that was spoken about, and it's just unbelievable that should happen. Whilst we're speaking about it, we hope emergency services get out there as soon as possible, and hopefully it's not serious. It's going to be an absolute pain for those involved, but hopefully no serious injuries. Greg, if the speed limit is 80k on that road, don't blame the driver's fault. It's the council's fault. It's excessive speed. We're not talking about people that are doing 80. It's people that are doing faster than 80, that are overtaking other people that are doing 80, that are overtaking people that are being courteous to let others out, etc. It's just a case of, for all of us, making it just as safe as is possible. Joined on the programme now by the Mayor of Letterkenny Milford Municipal District, Councillor Jerry McMonagle. Good morning to you, Jerry. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, okay. Now, plans are advancing for the future of the old courthouse in Letterkenny. So where are we at in this process?
Well, look, as you're aware, we get funding to, it's an iconic building at the top of the main street, and we get funding to help with the regeneration of it. And turn it into what we thought would be a good idea, which was a tourist attraction, a tourist centre where tourists coming to Letterkenny would get to see about the town and indeed the wider county. So we've had a number of public consultations. We've engaged with consultants, and they took away the ideas. And the purpose of the meeting now on Thursday, the 24th of October, from 3 to 8 p.m., is to inform the public of what's happened to date, and also to get their further opinions. Obviously, as I say, the project, the aim of it is to develop a tourist attraction in the town centre, which will also have a tourist information centre as well. And as we know, the tourist information offices is out at the Polestar, and it's only open a short period of time. So we think this would be a good idea. So look, it's just they tell them about the research we've done, the stakeholder engagement, the public engagements. We've done consumer testing in relation to what the tourist attraction might look like and possibly work. So we've sort of come to the idea of about, we identified a broad concept of discover the Donegal Centre, where we get to see what makes Donegal tick, its language, its music, our culture, you know, and we will have spaces for events, probably do, you know, through VR, audio, digital panels, displays, you know, touchscreen. It's a very modern way of looking at the many tourist attractions we have, not just in Letterkenny, but around the whole of the county.
And it would be accessible all year round, would you envisage?
Yeah. And, you know, our next, you know, the next steps, probably what we're looking at now going forward is, after these public consultations, is the whole the business plan for it, how it's going to be financed, the operating model. And then just, you know, the whole interpretive plan for the building, how do we take visitors through it? And that's where we bring in the sort of touchscreen, the VR stuff, the audio, digital information panels. And then we will have like an exhibition space where people, if they want to put on exhibitions, and also we'll have some sort of cafe, tourist sort of type.
And you would see it sort of as a hub for the whole county then. So obviously you would expect quite a bit dedicated to the offerings of Letterkenny, but it also could be a point where people could plan a trip to Buncranner or Mallon or wherever, Farn, or wherever they want to go.
Yeah, look, Letterkenny is the largest town in the county. It's a gateway for a lot of visits for people to different parts of the county. So we think it'd be a good place to sort of showcase the county. As I say, the courthouse is an iconic building. We've recently done some works to sort of maintain it a bit and weatherproof it. It's looking quite good now. We're in now the process now of, as I say, we've listened and the consultants from all around Britain, Europe, and Ireland, US, with the ideas that were come forward. And this is the sort of the best interpretation concept that we've had. It's about, you know, discovering the county. You can come into a place, go around it, visit all the different spots by either, you know, your touchscreen or your videos and stuff like that there, and then make a decision, right, we'll go there today or we'll go here tomorrow. You know, so we so think, that, you know, we have so much to offer in the county.
Yep, a drop-in event, if you've any interest in that, and I would suggest from anywhere in Donegal, it's on Thursday, the 24th of October, 2024. Just at the moment, we have, is it Fulcher Ireland responsible for the tourism office? They did an assessment and deemed that the Letterkenny Tourist Office would only be open a couple of months a year, effectively. There's a sign on the door saying reopening in June 2025. So who is this a council project then? So is it council that pay for this staff and ensure it's open all year round? Will it incorporate the old tourist office? Does that become defunct? Just in terms of, you know, how this will actually work in reality, Jerry?
Yeah, well, look, as I said, there will be a tourist information point there where if you drop in and just want to find out what's going on locally or indeed in the county, there'll be someone there to give you that information. The broader concept of the courthouse is about just the showcase all that we have to offer. I mean, we've been talking about the whole Northern Lights scenario, you know, Atlantic storms, where we would have videos, photographs.
Who's funding it, though? Who's funding it? Who's keeping it open?
Well, and that's the next step, as I say. The next step is they look at the business plan, the finances. The council have been awarded X amount of money for the regeneration as part of our regeneration programmes, and that will initially help set it up. But then we will need to look at, right, who is going to run this?
Yeah.
Is it going to be run by council? Is there a private operator wants to come in and take it on as a going concern? So there's a lot of discussions to be taking place, but we are in a very good place now. We have the building. We have the monies to start working on it. We have a plan. What we need to do now is just inform the people. And no doubt that plan will have to be tweaked here and there. So it's very, very important that people, they come along on Thursday the 24th between 3 and 8 p.m. And let's hear what they have to say. As I said, we've done a lot of the testing, the consumer testing around Britain, Europe, America, and indeed here in Ireland. And we feel we have the package, and we certainly have a product in Donegal, right, which we could sell anyway.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with you on that. Right, so it's all changed at the courthouse going forward. Big changes down close to the Market Square with the some people who weren't aware of this will get a bit of a shock as they go down the main street in the coming days. A significant bit of demolition that took place. And this all, I think there was a court order on Friday, and then it all happened over the weekend. It all happened very rapidly. Can you timeline it for us?
Yeah, well, look, obviously there's a lot of concern about those buildings for quite a while. And there was recent sort of inspection of the buildings, and it was deemed that they were dangerous in relation to, you know, they pose a danger to the public. And the council moved on that and put the fence around it and blocked off the footpath and all. We were engaged with owners and we continued to engage with the owners. We issued then that they were a notice that they was going to be put on the Derelict Sites Act, and they had X amount of time to respond. There was nothing positive coming forward. And under Section 3, Paragraph 2, the Local Government Act 1964, which deals with Saturday services, and under in light of sort of health and safety for the general public, the council then took the action that it took at the weekend. And look, they're iconic buildings. They've been there for a long time. They hold many, many memories for the people of Letterkenny. But we had to act decisively on this. Mm. We were coming into this week in particular where we had the storm on Sunday. We just couldn't afford to let it go on any longer.
Units were derelict, but there was one hairdresser's that was active in that block, wasn't there? What's the story there?
Yeah, and there were still businesses working. There was the hairdresser's, and there was an other little shop on the corner. But the extent of the deterioration of the building and the threat that posed, there was a threat posed to anybody using them buildings as well. We had to protect that. We had to protect the people. And we also had to protect the businesses, the sustainable businesses on the main street. This is the main street of Letterkenny. It's, you know, it's right beside the square where we have got almost €3 million. We're well advanced in designing a new square. And we could not have this type of building sitting on that corner that was posing such a real threat.
So what does it mean? Obviously, there were many people with an interest in this, and the council then had to take the action that it had to take. What's the story in accommodating the businesses that were active there now? Is that a council responsibility? Are they left without business premises themselves?
Well, the one that was actually still working was, as I say, operating, was the hairdressers. I'm not aware of the discussions going on there, Greg, to be honest.
Okay.
But I would like to think that would be, you know, part of, you know, and what we have now is an iconic site in the centre of Letterkenny. It could be a game changer for Letterkenny Main Street. Mm-hmm. And we need to be careful now about how we design that space and how we use it in the time ahead. And I just noticed from being down there, when I was down yesterday and during some of the demolition, and you could just see the spire of the cathedral from the main street, which you couldn't, not the way you could see it before. So, you know, we need to be careful and we need to be considerate.
All right, okay.
About the type of buildings.
We must move on, but just one final question. Do we pay that, the taxpayer pay that, or do the owners pay the bill to toss that?
Well, I would imagine the council, because they've moved down to Section 3, but I would say that if the site was being bought by us or acquired by us, then there would need to be some negotiations around that demolition and removal of the rubble.
Okay.
But I could just say, Greg, just I'd like to commend the builders, Boyd's Construction, who've done an excellent job within their short notice and have the job basically almost done and dusted now, and no harm was caused. And very professional way they conducted their business.
Not easy to protect the integrity of surrounding buildings and all that type of stuff, especially given the weather conditions. All right, fair play to them. Councillor Jay McMonagle, thank you very much for your time. I do appreciate it. Okay, we'll be back with more after the break. Michael Van Beck is owner of Jules Hair Supplies. He joins us on the show now. Thanks so much for calling up to us, Michael. We do appreciate it.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
And I think you're doing a great thing here because you're helping us to remind people of the dangers of investment fraud and how easy it is to, I suppose, get caught out. This all starts, does it, with something you saw on Facebook, Michael?
Yeah, I saw this ad on Facebook advertising for a small investment, if you want to make a small investment, and how quickly it can grow. It's through the cryptocurrency type of setup. Where it's through finances and I presume financial houses. I'm not sure what they're called, but cryptocurrency is what I know it as. And so you make a small investment of around 250 quid. Within a couple of minutes of having made that investment, which I did, I got a phone call from a so-called agent and who's going to be my financial guider. And they encourage you then to put more money into it. And that if you do, that it'll grow very quickly and you can do this and you can do that. And
now, we're talking with hindsight, but in the early stages of this, did it feel legit? Was there any red flags at this point? Obviously, €250, you took a punt, right?
At 250, yeah.
You took a punt at 250. And then the follow-up phone call, I presume they know how to say and how to behave and all that type of stuff. So at this point, did it feel like you were in a legitimate arrangement?
It felt okay.
Yeah,
okay. It felt okay because what I did was... I said, well, I'm not going to invest anymore. I want to see how it goes. And so I left it sit for about a week and they would ring me up and they guided me through. And this is one thing that I wanted to highlight is that they access your own computers or laptops or your phone on a thing called AnyDesk.
Yes,
and if you're aware of that and how quickly they can actually see into your bank accounts. So they can go in and go onto an app, your AIB app, your Bank of Ireland app, or whichever bank you're with, and they can see and they can actually go directly into your bank account.
So they initially convinced you that you needed to download this AnyDesk software, and once you give them access...
I had it for my business anyway, right, okay. But I didn't realise until later how dangerous this is.
But money began to go into your account.
And that's what I did. I set up and they showed me an account and... They showed me money coming back out and they actually paid it into my bank account. So after a week, the 250 became like 750. And I thought, oh, well, you know, this is nice. It seems okay. So I transferred 250 back out. So I got my 250 back and I left 500 in. And then the following week later, that was now 750 again.
They let you do this too. This is clever,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, right, they let me do it and they showed me how it was done.
Yeah.
No, I couldn't actually physically do it myself. They had to authorise it because I tried a couple of times going in when they weren't watching, going in and moving the money. And they were on the phone within minutes and say, you're trying to move your money again. And I say, yeah, well, you have to authorise that.
Yeah.
Anyway, in the long term... I invested another few quid because I thought this was quite good. And all of a sudden that became 10,000. Now, we're not talking small beer here anymore.
Was not your investment, is it? That was your return?
That was my return. I added about another 1,000
okay.
altogether. And it became 10,000.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked for that to be transferred into me, to be transferred back to me. They said, no problem. Yeah, we'll do that. And they transferred it back into me. But within seconds, it got this thing called a blockchain. And this blockchain is, they said it's a tax thing and you have to do this and you have to do that. And now all of a sudden, then I had to pay tax. And I thought, that's when the red flags went up. Big time. And because the tax was $2,800 US dollars. You had to pay it in a cryptocurrency into their account and da, 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 da. That was the end of it. I decided I was being had here.
Yes, so, well, I mean, I don't think everyone would have got it at that stage, though, because really you're saying, right, well, I have to pay 2,800, but I get 7,200 into my bank account.
No, they actually guaranteed you that you would also get the 2,800 back.
Right.
They said that it's to prove that you're legitimate.
Okay.
That's what they said to me. To prove that you're legitimate, that you're not a fake something or other, or that you don't.
I
guess you.
So, in other words, they were turning the tables. We have to make sure you're not a con man.
Yeah. So you were not going to get 10,000. You were going to get 12,800 back.
Given the access that they had, though, Michael, why weren't they able to empty your accounts?
Because I hadn't got anything in there.
Right.
I made sure that I had nothing in there anyway.
So whatever they could access,
there was nothing there.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
So. Red flag all over the place. So you, what, do you contact the bank? Do you contact the Gardaí or both?
I've contacted the bank and I've been down with a very nice lady in the bank and she put me through to the fraud squad in Dublin and the fraud squad said they would do what they could to try and get my money back. In fairness, I got a good bit of it back.
Yeah.
But I didn't get it all back. But they advised me in conversation with them and with the guards that what has actually happened here is that hundreds of people are on an almost daily basis getting caught at all different levels.
At different scales, because I suspect that your initial 250 investment for another person, and it all depends on what money you have access is, don't you? That could have been the 2,500. And the 1,000 that you subsequently put in for someone else, that could be
10,000 or 20 or 30. Yeah.
Because they seem to be successfully proving that it works. Okay, so...
And you dump your money into this crypto thing and then you can't get it back.
Yeah. So
I spoke to somebody. Sorry, Greg. I spoke to a friend of mine who's into this as a business and does it for an income, who lives in Dubai.
Legitimately.
And he lives in Dubai. And he advised me that what happens is that they put up everything is fake. So you have phone numbers and you think you're speaking to a legitimate person on a UK phone number. That could be in India, connects through.
Yeah.
It could be in India. What you see on the account is completely fake. It's made up. There's people in warehouses basically setting these things up because they're generating thousands upon thousands of income in hundreds of millions of pounds. So it doesn't cost much for them to set up a fake page to show that you've got money in a so-called account. Yeah. It looks great. And to me, I was convinced. I thought, I have 10 grand sitting there.
Yeah.
And I actually told my children that I was going to take them shopping.
I can imagine. So, listen, they use Facebook. They use other mechanisms as well, but they've lots of ways of using Facebook to make it look legit, to draw people in. You're saying just be very, very careful. I would not invest a shilling. And it's only through listening to stories like yours, Michael. It's not because I'm super intelligent or nothing, but I've just learned at this point not to go down these roads.
I thought I was wise. I really did, and I thought, you know, and I actually am mortified and feel ashamed and embarrassed.
What?
And I know
not
lots
at all,
of people.
Michael, lots
of people feel that you know
any of those emotions. No, I mean these people are professionals.
They are absolutely professional.
And they drew you in with a little worm.
And 250 doesn't seem like much. A night out is 250.
And they showed you, they demonstrated how they tripled it for you.
And not only that, but they also paid money back into my bank account and showed me how easy it was.
I can see how anyone could get caught with this.
You're well baited.
There's zero shame in this, Michael. Absolutely zero shame.
It feels shameful in a way that, you know, I mean, I think I'm intelligent, but, you know, and people out there may make smart comments, but, I feel free. I think lots of people out there are getting hurt by this, and that's why I thought I'd come and speak to you.
I genuinely don't, Michael, feel that will be anyone's reaction at all.
But I think people are definitely getting stung, and I'd like to see that stopped.
Yeah.
I really do.
But the reason it's allowed to continue, Michael, is because I think these scammers rely on us having some sort of unjustified shame and that we won't speak and we don't get the
information. I think that's the reason, too. That's why
I agree. Firstly, I think you were actually really quite cautious and protected yourself, and that's why your losses is quite
minimal
compared to what it would be. So I don't think there's any shame in that at all. I think you put your own checks and balances in there, and it got you out of it at an early stage. But anyway, it could be crypto investment this week. It could be some other investment. They will adapt.
I wanted to highlight something that I came across the past couple of days. on Facebook aimed at younger people are two in particular, one called Plinkit, where it's flashed up constantly on Facebook. If you're in a little game, you play a little game. My children play games that they cost nothing.
Yes.
But they but in the ads, there's ads through it called Plinkit. And it's targeted at Irish people where they think they can win lots and lots of money. And it shows them screaming, I've won. But actually what you've done is you're gambling. You're putting in wagers of bets to try and win and get free spins, and you never get paid.
Right, okay. Be careful of that. So that's some people also
Ninja,
have
Number Ninja and Plinkit are the
Number
two.
Number Ninja and Plinkit. And some people actually have their credit card associated with the Facebook account. Maybe they advertise something or whatever down the line. Just double check that.
Yeah.
Right, brilliant stuff for the adults and for the children as well. Michael, thanks so much for helping us get the word out there. And fair play to you for being smart enough to limit the amount these scumbags were able to take off you. I think that's impressive as well. That's Michael Van Beck, owner of Jules Hair Supplies, and we appreciate you helping us spread the news. Thanks,
Thank
Michael.
You.